at war in cyberspace. 19 December 2008. The stark reality is that the bad guys are winning and our nation is at risk. That's what retired Air Force Lieutenant General Harry Radigy Jr. wrote in an insightful article about cyberspace. As he describes our many challenges in cyberspace, General Radigy observes that the list of concerns is growing and endless. Rampant cybercrime, increasing identity theft, sophisticated social engineering techniques, relentless intrusion into government networks, and widespread vulnerabilities continuously exploited by a variety of entities ranging from criminal organizations and entrepreneurial hackers to well-resourced espionage actors. Over the last few weeks, we have focused on the security of our computer networks, and we found that we have big challenges. The bottom line is that we are at war in cyberspace. Today. All the time. Our enemies are attacking our network, the same network you use to send emails, share documents, and access to the internet. They are using stealth and surprise to insert malicious code into our network in order to gain intelligence. What is our enemy's intention? We don't know, but it is not friendly. Rob Tapana, our Command Chief Master Sergeant, said something that caught my attention. He observed that if our front gate was under attack, we would do something about it. We would reinforce the guards with our security forces, convene the battle staff, increase patrols, and raise awareness levels throughout the base. Chief Tapana then pointed at the computer on a nearby desk and said, "We must realize that that's our front gate, too." He is right. We need to think and act like warriors in cyberspace. That's where leadership is essential. General Radigy describes four stages in our journey to secure cyberspace. The first stage is ignorance. We don't know what we don't know about cyberspace attacks. We are past that stage now. If you didn't know about vulnerability in cyberspace, you do now. The second stage is awareness. We now realize that we are at war in cyberspace and that we are vulnerable. We no longer take access to the network for granted. We realize that it can be taken away unless we take steps to defend it. The third stage is actualization. We share a sense of urgency that we need to do something about the attacks on our network. We will learn more and more about cybersecurity. We will all work together to reduce our vulnerability and defend the network from attack. The final stage is the cyber mindset, where we think and act as warriors in cyberspace just as we do in air and space. We will train to protect ourselves and our networks from attack. We will all be on patrol as we look for new threats. Leaders at all levels will measure our vulnerability and direct defensive actions to counter the enemy. To get to the fourth stage, we're going to have to work through a paradigm shift about security in cyberspace. Many of us, including me in the past, have taken the network for granted. We can't do that anymore. Every computer connected to the network is part of the battle space. Every person that has access to the network is operating in a combat environment. Everyone must act responsibly, or it opens a hole in our defense. As I've written before, I believe you are all leaders because you have influence over other people in your workplaces, your families, and your communities. It's going to take your leadership to help us all make this paradigm shift. How do you lead others through change? You work through the stages of change faster than the people around you. So, as leaders, I ask that you move from awareness to actualization as quickly as possible. Talk to our experts, beginning with our communication professionals. Set the right example by following procedures and not taking shortcuts. Learn about and use the tools we have today. I promise that more tools are on the way. I'm working through the stages as fast as I can. We are improving the security of our computers at our headquarters. I have directed that no one is exempt from security measures, including me. If my computer has to restart while I'm in the middle of something, so be it. We must be willing to accept a moderate amount of mission degradation to secure ourselves against the enemy at the gate. General Radigy writes that despite the challenges facing us in cyberspace, he is optimistic that we are on the verge of a new dawn for cybersecurity. I'm optimistic as well because we're fortunate to have you to help us lead us through this change in our mindset. We are at war in cyberspace, and we will all need to apply our warrior skills to prevail. Fights on. Doing the right thing. 20 January 2009. Last week, our nation was inspired by the actions of a brave pilot, an everyday American who reminded us of who we are and who we can be. It just so happens that the pilot of U.S. Airways Flight 1549, Chesley B. Sully Sullenberger, is a classmate of mine. We both graduated from the Air Force Academy in 1973. When I saw his picture on the news, I immediately looked him up in our 1973 yearbook, and there he was, looking sharp in his cadet uniform. Sullenberger learned to fly in our Air Force, and he served out his 7-year commitment as an officer and a pilot. He then began a 29-year career as an airline pilot and safety expert. When you throw in his time as a cadet, he had more than 40 years of training, education, and experience to prepare him for the challenge he would face last week. He prepared himself well. Like all Air Force pilots, Sullenberger spent hundreds of hours studying emergency procedures and practicing them in simulators. He obviously continued this practice as he transitioned to the airlines. One definition of integrity is doing the right thing when no one else is looking. Sullenberger made himself a better pilot by studying and practicing when no one else was paying a lot of attention. His foundation of knowledge and skill was strong because he put in the time and effort required to build it. But preparation wasn't enough. When faced with a crisis, Sullenberger had to execute. He didn't panic. Instead, he focused on what he had to do to save his plane and his passengers. Ditching a large aircraft is an incredibly difficult thing to do, but Sullenberger was able to do it safely. He executed his responsibilities with excellence. Once the aircraft stopped in the cold waters of the Hudson River, Sullenberger continued to care for his passengers and crew. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg described how Sullenberger walked the aisle of the airplane twice to make sure everyone was out. In doing so, he put service to others before his own personal safety. In the middle of incredible stress and strain, he chose to do the right thing. In media parlance, the story of Flight 1549 has legs. Even as the historic inauguration approached, people remained fascinated with the incident, hanging on every detail as recounted by the passengers, ferrymen, and rescue specialists. Perhaps this can be explained by the sheer drama of the crash and the fact that it happened in our largest city. I think there's something deeper here, however. I believe that in the face of all the negative news we have endured in recent months, we are looking for a hero, or in this case, a Sully, who will do the right thing in the face of adversity. Americans love heroes, especially ordinary people who do extraordinary things, because one of our core ideals is that everyday people can make a difference. On a very cold day in New York, Sully made a difference. He did it by living according to our core values of integrity, service, and excellence. We didn't invent the core values in the Air Force. They came from the American people that we serve. Although the headlines may be filled with stories of fraud, greed, and waste, it is important to remember that there are millions of Americans who choose to live by these values. Whether it is the teacher who chooses to stay after class to help a troubled student, or the policeman who chases the thief into a dark alley, many Americans choose to live according to integrity, service, and excellence. The story of Sully Sullenberger reminds us of this. In these challenging times, it is good to remember what makes our country great. To Sully, my old classmate, thanks for landing Flight 1549, walking down the aisle twice, and setting an example for us all. Strengthening the Air Force Family. 9 February 2009. I also want to thank my brothers and sisters in the Air Force family. If you have attended as many promotion, retirement, and award ceremonies as I have, you've heard these sentiments many times. We may not phrase it in exactly the same way, but the meaning is clear. When we reach certain milestones and take time to reflect, we recognize that the bond we share with others in the Air Force is stronger than for most business world co-workers. This is especially true when we factor in the emotions of deployments and combat. The term brothers, sisters in arms is no accident. As we live, train, sweat, and bleed together, these bonds grow so strong that the only language we have to describe our feelings for each other is the language of family, the Air Force family. It would be a mistake to take these bonds for granted, however. If we don't respect and value each other, we risk breaking the family ties. This doesn't mean that you're always going to like everyone you meet in the Air Force, but if you grew up with brothers and/or sisters, you probably didn't always like them either. Building a strong Air Force family means that we each share a commitment to our fellow airmen and treat them in ways that reflect this commitment. I believe that we are all leaders because leadership is influence. We all have the ability to influence the people around us. I challenge you to be a leader in our family. You can influence others to build a stronger Air Force family by treating our fellow airmen as family members. How? Consider the following thoughts. A family laughs together. Our profession is serious business, but there is no reason that we can't have fun while we work together. When we smile and laugh with each other, we communicate a very powerful message. I enjoy being with you. Who doesn't want to feel like others enjoy their company? Laughing together goes a long way toward building a sense of family, as long as we're not laughing at someone's expense. Having fun and playing together are behavior traits that we should extend to our natural families, too. If your unit is not having parties, picnics, or playdates together with the families, go to your commander and volunteer to organize a fun outing or a get-together. I have found that the squadron, branch, division, or directorate that plays together stays together, especially when times get tough. A family cries together. When bad things happen to our family members, we are there for them. In our lives, all of us have issues such as aging parents, sick children, and financial difficulties. Moreover, our profession involves unforgiving activities such as flying or driving in convoys through a war zone. We will almost certainly know someone who is injured or killed while on duty. When these bad things happen, family members are there for each other. For example, in AETC, we have a squadron commander whose 8-year-old daughter was diagnosed with a cancerous brain tumor. Since word of this got out to the commander's Air Force family, the commander's personal family has been overwhelmed with support. Here's what they had to say when asked about how the Air Force family has helped. Since this whole ordeal started last August, our family has been blessed by every area of the Air Force family imaginable. AFROTC, Air Force Reserve Officer Training Corps, friends I haven't spoken to in 20 years, former F-117 drivers I didn't even know, civilian contractors and GS, General Schedule, employees who are acquaintances at best, squadron and group friends, and lastly, leadership all the way to the 4-star level. The Air Force family is a living, breathing entity that we are all a part of. You just don't get this kind of support outside the Air Force or military. This is not extraordinary. This is what families do, which leads to the next thought. A family sticks together and takes care of each other. On the day that an airman raises his or her hand to take the oath of office, he or she is part of the Air Force family. Airmen remain part of our family until we lay them to rest with a flag draped over their casket. During the time in between, we try our best to take care of each other by offering a warm welcome when a new person arrives on our base, by listening to someone who is lonely and far from home, by offering practical help to those left behind when their spouse is deployed, and in many other ways. Last week, I had dinner with a senior airman who had been injured in the war. As we talked, I found out that he had grown up in foster care. He had been separated from his siblings, so when he entered the Air Force, he was alone. I couldn't help but think to myself that we are the only family he has now. We must make sure that he gets the care he deserves because no one else will. In fact, we should go above and beyond to take special care of those who made big sacrifices in the line of duty. We should also give special treatment to the natural families of those who gave their lives in service to the nation. I believe that when airmen are killed or wounded, the units to which they were assigned should consider them members in perpetuity. If they've been wounded, they should be invited to unit functions, and for those who have died, their next of kin should get a call from the unit on special days. It's the right thing to do. You never know when you're going to make a difference in someone's life, so we should all live in a way that maximizes our ability to touch the lives of others. This means that we should have a healthy focus on others, not on ourselves. To paraphrase a wise person, we should not think less of ourselves, we should think of ourselves less. Our profession is all about service to others. We serve our fellow Americans by keeping them safe and free. We serve our fellow airmen by caring for them and their loved ones. To me, that is the essence of service before self, and it truly sets us apart. Leading in Lean Times. 3 March 2009. Be prepared. This old motto is still relevant today. As leaders, we must be prepared to face many kinds of potential challenges. Some challenges are so serious that, if they catch us by surprise, our mission and our people may suffer. I want to discuss one of those challenges with you now. You don't need to do more than pick up a newspaper to know that our nation and our Air Force face challenging economic times in the months and years ahead. Leading in lean times requires making tough choices, but it's important to realize that this is what leaders do. If you've ever heard me discuss leadership, you've heard me say that leaders must learn the art of balancing shortfalls because we never have enough money, manpower, or time. This is true in our personal lives as well as our professional positions. We balance shortfalls of money by choosing to spend some now, saving some for later. We balance shortfalls of time by attending the school play instead of golfing. Supervisors balance shortfalls of manpower by prioritizing some jobs today and putting off others until tomorrow. This is normal because we will never have enough money, manpower, or time to do everything. We have to prioritize. We often use tools to help us. A budget is a tool that helps us prioritize our spending. Another common tool is a schedule, which is just really a time budget. To prioritize jobs for our people, we use tools like staff meetings and to-do lists. I trust you are using these tools already. One tool I've found to be indispensable is the unfunded requirements list. This list makes up all of the projects and upgrades for your organization that are not in the budget. If you're a flight commander, this list may include new computers or furniture. If you are a wing commander, it might include a new hospital or parking lot. This list must be comprehensive and part of a multi-year plan for improvement. Most importantly, it must be in priority order. Your goal is to work down the items on the list one at a time, focusing on the top priority until you get the resources required before going on to the next item. You should be ready to execute the top priority at any moment, since you never know when the resources will come. If the item is complex, like a new building, it needs to be designed and ready to be contracted. Then, when your commander asks what you need, don't make the mistake of asking for many things at once. Focus on the top item on your wish list. Show your commander a vision, maybe a picture or model, along with a plan, explaining the requirement and the logic behind it, and tell the exact dollar amount required to make your dream a reality. Remember this, money goes to winners, and winners do their homework. All of these things you should do whether resources are plentiful or not. While it is much more fun when you can knock many things off your list over the course of a year or two, in lean times you may go many months without getting a new item. This can be frustrating, but it highlights the importance of correctly prioritizing things. To help with that, I recommend you go through this exercise. think of it as a tool for leading in lean times. Take a blank sheet of paper or a whiteboard and write down all of the things your unit does. Begin with the mission statement and write down all the tasks required to accomplish the mission. Additionally, write down the tasks that may not be captured in the mission statement. It's best to do this as a group exercise, and it is worth taking some time. When you have reached the 80% solution on this list, draw three concentric circles. Label the inner circle core, the middle circle sustainable, and the outer circle enhanced. Now here is the big challenge. Match the tasks you have written down to the three circles. The core tasks are things you have to do to accomplish your mission. They are the foundation of what you do. For example, if you teach pilots how to fly, you need to have some minimum number of sorties to accomplish this. Sustainable items are things that allow you to accomplish the mission with a high expectation for success and a comfort margin. In AETC, the majority of our direct training courses have a mix of core and sustainable items in them. It is usually difficult to separate the two, but it is critical to do so. The enhanced items are those that could be dropped without an appreciable degradation to the mission, even if it might be painful for some. When you have matched your task to these three circles, go back and examine your wish list. Is it really in priority order? If an enhanced item is your number one priority, then you should have taken care of all of the items that enable your core and sustainable tasks. If not, you need to re-examine your list. In lean times, we must protect the core tasks. This means ruthlessly cutting the enhanced items first, then figuring out workarounds when sustainable items have to go. Sometimes we may have to implement a workaround that is uncomfortable, but we must in order to protect the mission and core tasks. This has happened before. Our nation's military was cut to the bone in the years preceding World War II. When the war came, there was not enough equipment to train the large number of new recruits. Soldiers trained with wooden rifles and drove jeeps and maneuvers with signs reading, "Tank." I don't think we will see that again in our lifetime, but our forefathers left us a good example. When tasked to mobilize for World War II, our military was able to call upon the skill and knowledge of superb military leaders such as General George Marshall, General Henry Hap Arnold, Admiral Chester Nimitz, and President Dwight D. Eisenhower. In lean times, these men spent long hours studying and thinking about their profession. They stayed in the service when they could have pursued more lucrative opportunities elsewhere. Their core task was to prepare for the day when their country would need them to build up the force and defend the nation. When the time came, they were prepared. If we go through a lean period, our country is going to need men and women to do the same thing. Will you be one of those who lead us through the lean times and prepare for the future? I hope so. Creating Candor, 23 March 2009. If you ever have the chance to observe a flight debrief after a training sortie, you should jump at the opportunity. You will witness something special. Everyone makes constructive comments in the debrief, positive and negative, regardless of his or her position or rank. If the flight lead did something that was incorrect or dangerous, the wingman is expected to say something about it. This is true even if the wingman is a lieutenant and the flight lead is a lieutenant colonel or a lieutenant general. In the debrief, learning is more important than saving face. In the flying business, it's imperative that the truth come out, even if negative, and the best ideas are heard. That is why frankness in the debrief is so important. Perfection is the standard, and although we will never get there, we must always strive for it. This is why we are tough on each other. We discuss our shortcomings and make constructive suggestions on how to correct them. However, when the debrief is over and the door opens, we move forward as members of the same team. Should it be any different for our other operations? I don't think so, but it takes a strong leader to create this atmosphere of candor. In order to encourage our people to voice their alternative ideas and criticisms, We have to be confident enough in our people to listen to negative feedback and dissenting opinions, find the best way forward, and then lead in a positive direction. We all like warm fuzzies when people agree with our ideas and give us positive feedback. We naturally dislike cold pricklies when people disagree and point out our shortcomings. As leaders, we have to be mature enough to deal with negative feedback without punishing the source. The best leaders encourage frank feedback, especially when it is negative. We all have blind spots, areas where we think things are better than they are, and to correct these, we need to be aware of them. This means that we need to encourage dissenting opinions and negative feedback. We should ask open-ended questions. What are we missing? How can we do this better? What's the downside? What will other people say? When our people answer, we should welcome their inputs, even when those inputs don't cast our leadership in the best light. In the end, our time as leaders will be judged by the quality of our decisions and the accomplishments of our people. The personal price we pay in the short term for creating candor in our organizations is well worth the long-term professional and institutional benefits of hearing the best ideas and eradicating our blind spots. As followers, we must work at creating candor as well. While the leader must set the tone for open communication, it is important that those of us who voice dissenting opinions or give negative feedback should do so in a way that it can have the most effect. We can't expect superhuman leaders. This means we should speak in a way that doesn't turn them off immediately. Practically speaking, this means that we should avoid using superlatives and personalizing an idea or position. For example, which critique would be easier to accept? Boss, your decision is really stupid. Or, boss, this decision could have bad consequences for our folks. Remember that your goal is to influence your boss to do the right thing. You don't want to close the line of communication before you begin. When giving an alternative view or dissenting opinion, the more objective you are, the more effective you can be. You should avoid emotional arguments. Instead, use facts and logic to back up your position. The more homework you do beforehand, the more likely you will win the argument. In addition, when voicing your disagreement, be prepared to propose a solution or alternative path. This allows you to stay positive during a critique. If you can't come up with a solution, at least be honest about that up front. If you are pointing out a blind spot to one of your leaders, strongly consider doing it in private. This is especially true if the issue is more personal in nature. It is much easier for a leader to listen to a criticism made in private. You want to avoid embarrassing your leader in public if at all possible. We should also remember that the leader is ultimately responsible for the direction of the organization. If he or she decides to do something that you disagree with, you should voice your opinion, but be ready to accept the leader's decision. Remember, most decisions are decided based on personal experiences and are not right versus wrong, but right versus right. So long as the boss's decision isn't illegal or immoral, you should carry it out as though the idea was your own. That's the mark of a professional airman. Within our organizations, candor makes us stronger, and there are things we can do to create this openness while maintaining a sense of teamwork. As leaders, we should strive to set an atmosphere where dissenting opinions are welcomed. As followers, we should explain dissenting opinions with respect and objectivity. For both leaders and followers, the payoff will come as your organizations improve and grow. Consider it part of the price we pay to be the best. Today's Airman, 13 April 2009. Recently, I had the distinct honor to attend the Airman's Coin Ceremony at Lackland Air Force Base, Texas. It is always a privilege for me to meet the terrific men and women who train and are trained in what seems like a timeless setting. That day, the crystal blue sky melted into the field of blue-suited trainees who proudly marched onto the parade field. They were surrounded by thousands of family and friends, all who had traveled to Lackland to witness something special. Everyone in attendance sat, buttons busting with pride, with eyes straining to catch a glimpse of their son, daughter, brother, sister, husband, wife, or friend. The American flag presided, waving prominently from the top of the pole. Like everyone else, I sat at the ceremony marveling at the 745 trainees ready to become airmen in the world's greatest Air Force. This scene replays itself every week, year-round, at Lackland. For trainees that afternoon, however, it was their day, and I felt it as soon as the first flight marched onto the pad. Everyone felt it. Pride and eager anticipation were written all over their faces. These trainees knew that they had accomplished something absolutely amazing. I was especially proud of these airmen. They decided to join something bigger than themselves and defend our nation and its ideals. Within months, many of these airmen will be sent forward into harm's way. I have no doubt that they will succeed. You see, our airmen, non-commissioned officers, NCOs, and senior NCOs are the finest in the world. It doesn't happen by accident. Our recruiters fill our ranks with members from all walks of life, and our training and education systems are second to none. We are a reflection of American society, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Basic military training, BMT, is a terrific example of our Air Force's pursuit of excellence. The training builds upon the foundation influenced by mothers, fathers, grandparents, and teachers across the nation, emphasizing the Air Force core values, integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. It transforms young Americans into members of the Air Force family, a motivated team of warrior airmen. Why is our enlisted force the best? In a single word, trust. When an NCO from security forces tells me that the base is secure, I know without a doubt that all is safe. Before flying, I always review the forms documenting maintenance actions on that aircraft. The senior NCO's signature at the bottom of the forms is all I need to see to have complete confidence in the safety of that airplane. I liken it to the cell phone commercial many of you have probably seen on television. Although there may be a single man or woman standing in front, he or she speaks with the voice of thousands standing behind. A successful team is one that works together, enabled and empowered by trust. Where does this trust come from? It starts with our integrity, which is tested daily and without which a team cannot operate successfully. Basic training reinforces it with the discipline, initiative, and competency essential to defend our nation and its ideals. Technical training continues the theme and is the next journey for these airmen, where they will develop respective core competencies that fit into the overall Air Force machine. Later, these airmen will become NCOs and senior NCOs, and the Air Force will depend upon them to make difficult decisions, the tough calls that years of experience and training enable them to make. The Air Force machine relies on them and trusts them to make the right call. All of us have a job to do, and no job is more important than another. One terrific example is Tech Sergeant Matt Sladen. In October 2007, while leading an explosive ordnance disposal team to investigate a suspicious road sign in Iraq, Sergeant Sladen sustained extensive injuries when a bomb exploded 2 feet away from him. As he said later during his Purple Heart ceremony, "It's a rare thing for a person to find a job and career that gave them great, great joy. Every day I loved coming to work, and after a short period of time, I gained a great sense of purpose from what I did. I know that those days are coming to an end for me. I think probably what I'll miss the most is this Air Force family and this great sense of purpose." Sergeant Sladen gets it. All tasks have a purpose, and even the least glamorous are mission essential. We must all follow his lead and embrace our function, our purpose. On our Air Force team, everyone's ability to perform his or her function is what builds trust and makes this machine run so smoothly. Ultimately, we all share the same goal, the defense of our nation and its ideals. That's the common denominator, regardless of rank, where trust and mutual respect are paramount. At every base and in every shop and office, Air Force leadership, both officer and enlisted, consistently sets the example. We are all role models and always on the job. Our airmen live up to these expectations every day. Back at Lackland, the corn ceremony concluded with the airmen's creed. All 745 spoke with a single voice. I am an American airman. I am a warrior. I have answered my nation's call. It was absolutely captivating, and the crowd hung on every word. As the newly coined airmen finished the creed, their voices rose in unison for the last line, "And I will not fail." The last words echoed across the field and stayed with me. I knew all of the new airmen stood that afternoon, wondering if they were ready, eager to be tested. In reality, they had just passed their first big test with flying colors. Other tests and challenges will follow, but these new airmen will face their challenges as members of the Air Force team. I have unwavering trust in our team. Together, we will not fail. Greeting Carmen, 30 April 2009. If you haven't seen the AETC headquarters building, you're missing out. It is a grand historic building that was built in the 1930s, nestled under age-old oak trees. Although initially used as an academic hall for new Air Force aviators, the building has had many uses over the years. Today it, along with sister buildings of the same era, houses members of the headquarters AETC staff. For those in the main building, standing every morning on the red tile sidewalk that leads to the front doors, is Carmen. Carmen is an important part of my morning routine. You see, each morning I park my car in front of the headquarters building and walk up that wide, red-tiled sidewalk to the front doors of the building. There she stands, working with a mop in hand, water pail nearby, and a bright smile that stretches from ear to ear. I always stop and talk with Carmen. She makes a difference in everything she touches. Carmen is an unassuming, humble woman with a sparkling, energetic outlook that can make even the darkest day feel brighter. Through the years, she has worked to help support her family and has successfully raised two sons, now grown and on their own. Although Carmen has held many positions at military locations around San Antonio, she has made Randolph shine for the last 8 years. Today, she isn't just responsible for the headquarters building. Carmen can be seen all over the base. You'll see her at the 99th Flying Training Squadron, the chapel, and even at the base fitness center. Carmen is everywhere, greeting dozens of people every day, and this base is better because of her. Carmen works to ensure that her labor achieves the right effect, that everyone who drives past, visits, or works in the building feels a part of something special. The headquarters building routinely hosts foreign ministers of defense, air chiefs, and American civic and military leaders and represents the nearly 90,000 men and women worldwide that belong to AETC. The building is an integral part of the organization and is everyone's first impression at work every day. It all starts with Carmen's attention to detail. Carmen's professionalism is evident all over the base, and it stems from pride. She never complains about her responsibilities and relishes the opportunity to make a difference. If she sees the flag in front of the building rolled up by a gust of wind, she unfurls it. Dust on a ledge doesn't stand a chance. She's never idle, always taking the initiative to exceed expectations and set a higher standard. Everything she touches is better as a result. You must realize that in Carmen's line of work, a job well done is rarely noticed or lauded. We, as a people, don't notice clean, but we do notice dirty. Carmen understands this and quietly creates a positive impact on the headquarters staff. Others instinctively and unknowingly follow her lead in their areas of responsibility and push for the same standard of excellence that Carmen sets daily. Such excellence becomes ingrained in the organization's culture. After all, people are far more likely to pick up a lone piece of trash on the floor than a floor littered with many. This adage goes for all things, not just trash. What has impressed me most about Carmen, however, is her positive attitude. There's a lot to be said about someone who sees the world as being a glass half full. True, we must guard such optimism with realism, but it is far easier and more fun to follow a positive, energetic leader than one who exudes negative gloom. Such a positive attitude is contagious to the entire organization and has a positive impact both up and down the chain of command. It is a key element of any successful team. The one problem is that Carmen is so effective and efficient that her work begins to blend into the building. After a while, it can be easy to forget the importance of her labors. I get accustomed to seeing her on the red tile walkway, and the routine becomes an expectation. I sometimes forget to appreciate her impact. We must not forget that everyone in the organization makes a difference. No one person or position is of greater value than the other. All are equal in the pursuit of excellence, and all contribute to the Air Force mission. We cannot afford to take anyone for granted, military, civilian, or contractor. The mission and our culture would suffer as a result. All of us know people like Carmen, those at your base who quietly make a difference in people's lives. Take time to recognize and appreciate everyone. The next time you find yourself at headquarters AETC, take time to greet Carmen on the red-tiled sidewalk. She's made a difference in my life, and I know she'll make a difference in yours. Develop your vision. 2 June 2009. Try to imagine an adaptive training environment that sits inside a bare room. This environment can be manipulated to simulate any task from simple to complex. With the push of a button, the bare room transforms into a living, breathing, interactive experience. Sounds and smells abound. People appear and interact, and objects can be held and manipulated. Once the training is complete, the same switcher button disengages the system, making the entire simulation disappear, leaving the original, stark, bare room. In the Star Trek series, such an innovation was part of its daily routine. The holodeck permitted personnel aboard the Starship Enterprise to experience an interactive learning simulation. Imagine how such an innovation could help members of our Air Force. Not only would it save space, but it would also help manage risk, reduce training costs, and permit personalized learning programs built specifically for the individual. The holodeck would revolutionize all aspects of how we operate in the Air Force. The holodeck is my vision of the perfect training and education aid. In fact, I wish every installation had hundreds of these interactive rooms throughout the base. The possibilities are endless. Sadly, I must temper my vision with reality and the realm of the possible. Although my vision may not be feasible today, it doesn't mean that I should give up. Our job is to make dreams come true each and every day. I know you all have similar dreams, visions that could benefit our airmen both today and tomorrow. Such visions must be pursued. You should never, ever, ever give up. In order to realize a vision, several things need to happen. First, you must align the vision with one of our core service functions. The closer to the core, the easier it will be to gain support and, eventually, resourcing. Next, take the vision and develop a strategy. Depending on your vision, the strategy may involve acquisition, implementation, execution, modification, or one of many other aspects. Let your strategy start at the 40% solution and then let it evolve to the 80% and eventually to 98%. Realize that the process is continual. You will never get to 100%. With the strategy in place, you can start socializing the vision. Socialization will also help your vision progress and grow roots through increased organizational support and understanding. The support will help you champion the concept for resourcing. After all, your vision must have resourcing in order to come true. Those resources will go to winners, not to losers. Invest the time and energy to be a winner. In life, and especially in the Air Force, priorities and personnel are always changing. Over time, your vision will need to adapt to the realities of change. it will require even greater persistence and objectivity. Giving your vision roots and aligning it with core functions will create something that can be handed off and sustained through change. The best ideas, sustained by hard work, can be carried forward by any leader. You may also find yourself joining an organization and accepting someone else's vision. In this situation, evaluate that person's vision against current realities and resourcing priorities. If that person has done his or her homework, the project will be easy to move forward. If not, assess the vision to determine if it should move ahead or if its time has passed. Last month, while visiting Fort Dix, New Jersey in the Air Force Expeditionary Center, I came as close as I've ever been to a functioning holodeck. I watched in awe as deploying airmen entered a series of rooms at the Medical Training Simulation Center. They fought through heavy smoke to reach bloodied bodies that littered the floor. Sirens wailed and explosions shook the room, all interrupting their efforts to save the simulated wounded. Once their training was complete, instructors activated the switch that disengaged the simulation. In this situation, the switch did not make the entire interactive experience disappear. Although the smoke cleared and the sirens stopped wailing, the original stark, bare room still held the medical training dummies. It was more than enough to get my heart racing. My vision still needs some time to evolve and mature. This does not mean I'm going to give up. I simply need to work a little harder. Our Air Force needs you to champion your vision as well. Develop it along our service core functions and socialize it. Let it grow roots and evolve. Don't let your vision disappear like the end of a holodeck simulation exercise. Do your homework and the resources will follow. After all, it is your initiatives that fuel the positive change that makes our Air Force the finest in the world. The Art of Objective Decision Making, 29 June 2009. Making decisions is something we all do every day. Most decisions are made without much thought, almost unconsciously, and in many cases, automatically. Others, however, are decisions that involve time and thought and can impact more than just ourselves. These are the decisions where the process is an art. It defines who we are as leaders. Saying this isn't a stretch. As leaders, we do things in order to create a desired effect. Making the best decision hits at the core of creating that effect and, in turn, is an essential aspect of being an effective leader. Now, these aren't decisions that involve right versus wrong or lying, cheating, or stealing. We must never compromise our integrity. In fact, most of these decisions involve right versus right, and the decision may be different today than it was yesterday. This is what can make them so challenging. Let's take a moment to look at the elements involved in making the best decision. Effective decisions require objectivity. The old adage, the more objective you are, the more effective you are, has never been more accurate or applicable than it is today. It can be tempting to look at decisions through the lens of a small straw. Effective leaders must step back and gain a much broader view. They must open their aperture. I've always advocated looking at issues and decisions from the viewpoint of your boss's boss. This approach helps open the aperture and maintain objectivity. In order to gain the broad, objective view, leaders must work to gather a complete picture of the situation. Some call this situational awareness. Others call this a 360-degree view of the issue. In either case, that awareness involves considering all of the variables weighing into the decision, the competing interests involved, and the potential consequences. The potential consequences must also include possible second and third-order consequences. Tough calls like these can involve individuals and organizations and issues beyond those initially thought. Weigh the consequences against unit missions and organizational goals. Investigate how the decision will move things forward in the near, mid, and long term. This will provide the context for the decision, and although it will involve a lot of work, will result in the broadest view of the entire process. Tough decisions can be very emotional. Don't let emotion play into the decision-making process. Emotion only serves to cloud the issue and could potentially result in a decision where near-term happiness fades quickly into mid- and long-term unintended challenges. Leaders must look at decisions from the outside, unattached to the emotional influence from within. Leaders must rise above such distractions in order to maintain their objectivity. Leaders use decision-making to define reality. Decisions made within context and with the benefit of situational awareness will position further issues for success and establish tomorrow's realities for our subordinates, our boss, and ultimately our boss's boss. In the end, objectivity will ensure that decisions result in the desired effect and will keep you and your organization headed in the best direction. It's all about service. 16 July 2009. Staff Sergeant Sarah Price worked diligently as a radar approach control, RAPCON, controller within the 71st Operations Group at Vance Air Force Base, Oklahoma. If anyone had asked her what she did, her response would have been simple and quick. I control aircraft. No one would have argued the importance of her job, especially since it directly enables the student flying training that Vance conducts on a daily basis. Had you asked, Sergeant Price would have told you that her ability to make a difference in our Air Force was directly related to her capability to expertly control Vance's aircraft. Her perspective, however, was about to change. On Sunday, 8 June, at 1 minute after midnight, the collective bargaining agreement between an Air Force contractor and its labor force at Vance expired, and student flying training stopped. Nearly 800 people went on strike. That's over 40% of the base's labor force. These were all key and essential people who not only ran aircraft maintenance operations, but also enabled most base support operations. Suddenly, the base was out people to run the Child Development Center, base supply system, environmental management programs, transportation, mail delivery, communication systems, civil engineering operations, and many more services the base's population depends on every day. The leadership at Vance had to make some immediate changes to reallocate limited resources based on new priorities and realities. Services that had long been taken for granted were now in jeopardy. Student flying training was no longer the most important operation on the base. 1 minute after midnight on 8 June, Sergeant Price ceased working as a RAPCON controller and became the base's lodging detail non-commissioned officer in charge. When she returned to work, Sergeant Price began training in a brand new capacity to learn the intricacies of military lodging operations and even spent time learning how to handle hazardous waste. She and her team worked every day of the strike, including weekends. Lodging, a base service function with 100% occupancy at the outset of the strike, could not fail. Being an airman in the U.S. Air Force is all about service. For many, when we start serving in the Air Force, this is simply something we do. As time passes, military service becomes central to who and what we are. This transition happens at different times for all of us. The sooner the better. When the Air Force is who you are, then you have internalized its core values. You have spent the extra time to finish the job right. You'll stop and pick up the lone piece of trash along the road while jogging. You'll put the needs of others ahead of your own. Is Sergeant Price's story unique? It certainly isn't in the 71st Flying Training Wing. The entire base population shifted responsibilities to keep the wing running. When the strike eventually ended more than 2 weeks later, the base was ready to return to its traditional allocation of responsibilities. Sergeant Price, her lodging detail teammates, and the rest of the wing returned to their normal duties. Student flying training is once again a top priority for Vance Air Force Base. Tranquility is defined by the sound of aircraft engines above. Vance's reallocation of responsibilities during the strike helped the base gain an important lesson in priorities. Base support services provide the foundation for Vance to conduct its primary mission, student flight training. This is just as applicable at every installation across the entire Air Force and not just at Vance Air Force Base. Our daily base support activities can never be taken for granted. From Sergeant Price's perspective, even the smallest jobs play their part in sustaining the mission. Stories like Sergeant Price's happen every day across the Air Force. Service-focused airmen helping each other to get the mission accomplished, even if it means moving away from their comfort zone. In her wildest imagination, Sergeant Price would never have expected to have the opportunity to make such a positive difference in people's lives and in her organization while working for base lodging, not as a RAPCON controller. As airmen, we are all united by our commitment to integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. Through our core values, Sergeant Price made a difference for Vance Air Force Base. If you ask Sergeant Price today what she does, her response, still simple and quick, sounds a little different. I am an airman. You see, serving in the Air Force is who she is. The sooner all of us follow her lead, embracing service and the other core values, the better our force will be.